Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Back in January, when I last interviewed local MP Philip Lawrence, he was tight-lipped about who he was going to endorse for the leadership race for the Conservative Party of Canada. It was very early days. Peter MacKay had announced, Lawrence had said nothing, and then a few days later, Durham MP Aaron O'Toole raised his hand. Almost immediately, Lawrence pledged his support for his longtime friend and political mentor. 8 months of campaigning culminated in a nerve-wracking vote last weekend that saw O'Toole come away victorious. Here is my interview with Lawrence about the campaign and the path forward for the leader, himself and the party. I'm so pleased to have with me today Philip Lawrence, MP for Northumberland Peterborough South. Welcome to Consider This.
Yeah, very happy to be here. Thanks, Rob.
Before we get started, you mentioned you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, I wanted to send my thoughts, my prayers, and my love out to the Glover family. Of course, I believe I've seen it on his Twitter, so it's public, the loss of his son. And I would tell everyone out there, let's take care of each other. And I am an advocate and will be advocating for mental health issues. And so I continue to do that. And so I just want to send out my love, my prayers, my thoughts to the Glover family. The greatest fear I have as a father is the loss of a child. And I can only imagine the grief that the Glover family is going through. So once again, just my prayers, my thoughts, my love to the Glover family.
Now let's talk about politics. Yep. I wanted to talk to you today about your involvement with the Aaron O'Toole leadership. I know that you endorsed him very early on. I believe when we last spoke, you were in fact holding your breath, just waiting for him to make the announcement. And then you almost immediately were involved with the campaign. So you have a long and involved relationship with him and the leadership. So I want to start by asking you, tell us the story about the moment when you learned Aaron O'Toole had won the party leadership. But where were you and what were you doing?
Yeah, so I drove up to Ottawa on the Friday evening or afternoon to get the last group of ballots. We had about 40 or 50 ballots. Several people called me. And so during the late night, the night before, I was driving from house to house picking up ballots as they forgot. So drove up and had the ballots. But the night of the actual of his winning the victory, the leadership, I was in a hotel room with a group of MPs, fellow O'Toole supporters. We were going through the counts like everyone else were. And of course, if the public doesn't know it, every politician also thinks they're a pollster as well. And so we were going through the numbers and so we each had an idea of where Aaron needed to be. And so we saw BC, and quite frankly, BC came in a little bit light. And so that was a bit worrisome. But once we saw Quebec, we were very, very confident in the room on the first ballot, because that was just tremendous. And a big kudos out to Aaron's organizer, Lupa. In Quebec, he, a former MP, did an absolutely amazing job, nearly doubling up Peter MacKay in Quebec. So,
also, too, I mean, there was some technical difficulties. We're all aware of those. How did that change the dynamic that night? I know in these moments, I've covered political conventions. There's just an incredible amount of energy as everything peaks into this one moment where you expect the announcement. And then delays, just there's a feeling that goes with it. Can you tell us a bit about what happened then and how you responded?
Yeah, as I think I put it on my Twitter, I was actually, I think, more nervous for Aaron than I was nervous for my own election night. And so just like you can imagine, almost a parent watching a child, how nerve-wracking it is. You would much rather be the one suffering the slings and arrows as opposed to your child. And then they put it off half an hour, an hour, 2 hours. I think it was darn near midnight by the time we got a decision. It was really nerve-wracking, right? So we're all politicians in the room, and so we're all trying to smile and got our game face on. But you could see the tension in the room without looking too far deep.
Do you feel that there is a role for the other candidates within the party? And if so, what would that be?
Yeah, so I would absolutely. So with Leslyn Lewis is I'm 110%, and I am excited for her to be a member of our caucus. She announced, I believe a day or two ago, that she indeed is going to run. I'm sure that we'll work to put her in a riding that she can ably and well represent and is a good fit for her, both personally and politically. And so I look forward to Leslyn adding a voice in the caucus that we need. I think she was very articulated on a number of issues. And I think I'm very excited to welcome her as a member of caucus. Peter will have to see. I understand he just tweeted out this morning that he's 100% behind Aaron, and so that's great. And then he's talking to Aaron about what his future might be. Peter's been a huge part of our movement since almost the beginning. Of course, him and former Prime Minister Harper were responsible for uniting the right. And for those of us who are on this side of the aisle and who are, well, Rob, not as young as we used to be, we can remember the years and years of being in the wilderness as a conservative movement when we were split apart between the Reform Party and the Progressive Conservative Party. So I would love to see Peter as well. Derek Sloan, I have, as Aaron said, I think very eloquently, I have stark differences on a number of different issues. And but Derek is a member of our caucus, and we'll quite frankly see what his future holds.
I know that there's been a little bit of a backlash against him, both during the campaign and since the leadership has been announced. How do you respond to that and your feelings around what he represents within the party?
Yeah, I think Derek and I have some stark differences on a number of different issues. We are a big tent, broad-based party. I don't really have any other comments other than that, Rob. But like I said, we've got some stark differences on that. And we'll see what the future holds.
What would those be? Can you say?
I think you can go through some of his comments. They were very different than my beliefs, and I'll just leave it at that, Rob.
Did you have a specific role in the leadership campaign? As I said earlier, you jumped on board very, very early, and I happen to be aware also that you have a history with Aaron O'Toole. He's not just you're not just a Johnny come lately. So yeah. maybe you could talk a little bit about what that history is and then maybe a bit about your role in the campaign.
Yeah. So Aaron has been a mentor to me throughout my political career in Northumberland, Peterborough South. And for those who aren't aware, Aaron used to actually have the part of the riding that I live in used to be in his riding. And so he is a celebrity down in the part of the riding I live, which of course is the Clarington, Swathy, Orono, Newcastle. And so went out in the neighbors, like John O'Toole was also Aaron's dad, was also represented to Clarington, Newcastle provincially. And so the O'Toole name is well-respected and well-loved. And so they were very excited with my connection with Aaron. And then Aaron was also sort of took me underneath his wing. The way I like to describe Aaron to people who haven't had the opportunity to meet him is he's like that father next door, right? He's always got that smile for you, that hand when you fall down. He's also got that look for you when you're a little bit off course there, that all those great dads have. And so Aaron's been right there along with me, giving me that smile and encouragement when I need it, and maybe that look when I go off track a little bit. So I really appreciate everything that Aaron has done. In terms of the leadership, I was primarily involved. I wanted to stay within our riding, so I didn't want to go too far from that. And so my role was pretty much here in Northumberland, Peterborough South, talking to folks here about Aaron and explaining to him what Aaron stood for and why I was standing behind him and why I think he'd make a great Prime Minister of Canada.
Well, that leads into my next question is why, in your mind, was he the right choice for being the leader then?
Yeah, I think Aaron's a great fit for Canada. In many ways, I think he's a quintessential Canadian. Grows up in a GM town, working with his father, his father worked for GM for 30 years. He understands small town Canada, living in Bowmanville, had a background in the military, is also a lawyer. He's a pragmatic, centrist Canadian who should, in my opinion, appeal to 90 to 95% of our population. I'm not saying he's going to get that vote, but I think he appeals widely across the spectrum, as it were.
Well, it's interesting because when O'Toole ran in 2017 and Andrew Scheer won, he tried to appeal to the moderate side of the party. This time he presented himself differently, letting McKay sort of hold the center, and he went a bit more to the right. Why do you think this was the correct strategy to win the leadership this time?
Well, I don't know if it's much as a strategy, and I understand that there was some different positioning, but it's sort of who Aaron is, right? Like Aaron should, and he does, and I've seen him appeal to those who are more conservative and those who are more centrist and even the most progressive. He, of course, voted for, has a great record voting for LGBTQ2 on supporting rights. But on the other hand, he's also stood up for Canadians, and he stood up for Canadians when it comes to the free market and to the economy. He's a great fit for Canada because he's got a broad appeal, and he'll stand up for all Canadians across the board.
One of the things, though, is when you look at his campaign, though, there have been commentators, and there may be some people in the audience listening today who might say, you know, he played a certain image of himself that might be similar to Donald Trump down in the South. You know, make Canada great again. We've got to go back to certain values in Canada, and, you know, let's take Canada back. Though all those kinds of rhetorical things that were said during the campaign. How do you explain that to people who are listening and people who may be concerned a bit about this sort of far right Trumpist portrayal of him and his positions?
I mean, I just reject that narrative out of hand. Anyone who's listened to Aaron O'Toole, he's about as far away from Donald Trump as you can imagine. This is a polite Canadian's Canadian here, a gentleman there, one who stood up for rights across the spectrum. And yeah, he will stand up for Canada and Canadians on the world stage. And he will show strong leadership and make sure that we develop the type of relationships we need with free countries who have open economies, and stand up and make sure that Canada isn't taking advantage of the, and we've seen, quite frankly, we've seen weak leadership on the world stage from Justin Trudeau. We still have the two Michaels left in China, now going on years on end, where they're sitting in a Chinese prison without barely any contact. Aaron has been upfront and we should stand up to the communist Chinese regime on those things. But in terms of comparisons with Donald Trump, I almost laugh at that because if you've ever seen, there's not a more eloquent, kinder human being. He's the dad next door, and calling him Donald Trump, I mean, it's just to me silly.
But, you know, you mentioned his stance on China. And, you know, when you look at that situation, I mean, these situations are hugely complex. And while you're absolutely right, we'd all wish that the two Michaels were back in Canada. It's never that simple. And so, you know, what would you say, or what would your party say to make anything different? Because, you know, you get someone like China upset, and they have huge economic power. And you know, we've seen just the things when we deal with the Americans around trade issues, that we just saw a softwood lumber dispute settled that has taken years. We're now having trouble with the aluminum tariffs. I mean, it can be very damaging on a lot of levels if we don't tread carefully. So what are you suggesting is going to be different just because we start saying, well, let's take Canada, you know, let's take Canada back?
What I would say is that Canada does have a unique position in the world as a middle power. We have the ability to influence other countries, and to quite frankly, if it's not too trite, to make this world a better place, as it were. But in order to do that, we need to have respect and we need to have a serious leader. And I agree with you. These things are complicated issues. And if you look at Aaron O'Toole's resume, he is built as a serious human being. And you have his experience as a lawyer, as handling serious problems and serious issues in the private industry and also in the military. This is a serious leader who is capable of solving serious problems. Will we be able to go through all the complexities of the Canadian-Chinese relationship in our interview today and why Aaron O'Toole will fix that? No. But I can tell you that Aaron O'Toole has the gravitas and is the man to help resolve these issues with China.
Well, let's move on. And then there is a lot of economic plans coming from O'Toole during the campaign. And in the face of the pandemic, with everything being so fragile, is the traditional ideas of the Conservative Party to cut spending and lower taxes and reduce government and staying out of the way of business still a good strategy? I mean, you know, we've watched your colleague Doug Ford navigating these waters, and one would say it hasn't been a textbook conservative series of solutions that he's put forward. He's been very pragmatic. How is it going to be different for you, or is it going to be different? I mean, do we really need to be cutting taxes and reducing programs, government programs, to support people in this pandemic?
Yeah, and so what we need to do, and we have to remember that this is, although necessary, and don't get me wrong, it was a government-imposed economic problem. Because the government had to, and like I said, I'm not disagreeing that this was the right thing to do. It was 110%, but the government closed down the economy. And so it only made sense that the government was there to help people to ensure that they could follow the lockdown, to make sure that they could stay home, that they weren't in a place where they had to say, am I going to eat today or am I going to follow the rules? And so I understand that and I get that. But that's why these subsidies were required, because of a unique circumstance. Are you, if you're asking me, do I believe that capitalism and free enterprise work? Hell yeah, I do. And I won't back off that one iota. I mean, you look at the world and you look at that capitalism, free market enterprise, you can see where the strongest economic players are. And those are all countries that embrace free markets and free enterprise. But am I also going to argue and going to protect and going to make sure that we take care of the most vulnerable? Absolutely. But there's a, like you said, there's a huge role for just common sense pragmatism here. So if we look for, this is just an example, Rob. If we look at the way that the CERB works, at $1,000, there's an arbitrary cutoff. And so I believe that every resident of Northumberland, Peterborough South, every resident of Canada wants to work, they want to work hard. But there's a high disincentive. So if you are a worker and your employer and you've earned $990 that month, your employer says, you know, I want you to work one more shift, Philip. I want to work. I want to produce. I want to give back. However, I know that if I work that one more shift, I'm going to lose $2,000. The tax rate on that is over 1,000%, Rob. And so that's the idea. We need to have programs that incentivize work that don't cost people thousands of dollars to go to work. And so that's the type of solutions we want going forward. Those that support the most vulnerable, those that open up our economy, because ultimately, Rob, the solution is not government programs. The solution is bringing back jobs to Northumberland, Peterborough South. We've seen the closure of the Weston plant here, and we've seen a number of negative economic consequences because of this Liberal government. And we need to bring back industry to our area, to Canada. And one of Aaron O'Toole's key pillars is making Canada more self-sufficient. Let's build things. Let's build more things that brings jobs, brings quality of life. Let's bring quality jobs back here to Northumberland, Peterborough South.
I listen to what you're saying, and then I think about what's happened south of the border. And when you let a free market stimulate the economy and drive the pandemic response, we see the disaster which has taken place in the United States. And when you talk the way you talk, it sounds to me like you're right on the border of saying, you know, let business be business and let it do whatever it wants. And, you know, if I'm sitting at home and I'm vulnerable and I'm not sure I want to go back and I'm not sure I'm going to have health and safety, and maybe I'm a high-risk individual, in this pandemic, and I really can't go back. Where are you protecting me in the model that you just described? Because it sounds to me like you'd let all business, and we've all got to run back to work, whether we like it or not. And this is such a unique thing. So could you maybe elaborate and clarify?
That's not what I said. Yeah, no, that's not what I said, Rob. So what I'm saying is that the COVID-19 was a unique set of circumstances, and that lockdown was 110% necessary. Let me be clear. The government did what they should have done. And in fact, they should have done it earlier. If we look at the border closure, the Liberal government was a month and a half late. They were a month and a half late on the wage subsidies. They were a month and a half late on giving subsidies and making sure that PPE was available to our hospitals. Government has a role. And when we have events like COVID-19, I am very thankful for many of the efforts that the Ford government did. And we absolutely needed to lock down when we did. I'm on the record as saying we should have locked down earlier. I'm also on the record as saying we should have worn masks earlier, that we were way behind in recommending masks. I wear my mask everywhere we want to go. And so government has a huge role. But as we transition out of this COVID-19, and you know, if we go back to the second wave, we need to re-examine those things, and we need government to be protective of us, 110%. But as we transition out of this, ultimately, the driver of our economy, what provides for the tax revenue that we need to deliver the amazing social programs that we have, the great healthcare we have, the great education system we have, the engine, all of that, the one that provides the tax funds to make all that the world to go around, is the private sector. And so we need to continue to promote that sector. And if there are regulations that are helping our environment, helping the health of Canadians, we need to keep and maybe build and increase those regulations, no question. But there are lots of regulations that are excessive, that are either from the past. So for example, actually on your colleague's show, Dave Glover, he actually brought up the regulation that you are not allowed to drive cattle down Yonge Street on a Sunday. Those type of regulations don't need to exist anymore. And there are literally thousands of examples of that, where we can free business owners from excessive regulation, and in some cases, excessive taxation, in order to allow them to create the jobs that we need to make our community more prosperous.
All right. So just so that we're clear, because I know that, you know, I'm not wanting to get into a big argument here, but at the same time, I feel it's important to be clear. That, you know, we're sitting on the precipice now, kids going back to school, more businesses opening up. And, you know, we talk about the second wave, and you're saying that if we get into the second wave, that we may need to lock down again. And that's an important part of a plan going forward. Am I all correct on that?
Yeah, we need to listen to the medical experts. And from that, I'm 100% on board with what the Ford government has done. And so we need to listen to medical experts and keep Canadians safe. That's our number one responsibility. Don't take away from this my passion for support of small business, for business owners, for entrepreneurs. All right. In any way, I want Canadians to be unsafe at all. That's just not the case.
Because I know that a big part of this recovery has been literally the billions of dollars that have been invested into business to help them get restarted. And, you know, when you talk about let business be business and we shouldn't have regulations, we shouldn't have this, a big part of this recovery has been the fact that the government has been there to help them with rents, to help them with developing and having the money to, say, put personal protective equipment available to small business, to help, you know, manufacture masks and all those good things, plus, you know, incentives and supports. And you talk to any business person in Northumberland, I'm sure they haven't been touched in some way, shape, or form by some program that the government has put forward. So when you talk about letting business be business, how do you balance those two things? Because without those supports, I'll be honest with you, I wonder how much of our downtowns would be closed. I wonder how much of our tourism would be closed, and how our manufacturers might be shut down. So how do you balance those things?
Right. So what actually, some of those programs have been great, and I'm on record as saying that. The challenge is some of the administration of those programs have been extremely challenging. So I'll give you the example of Brockeneers. And if, Rob, you need a great suit, you should head down there. So they applied. I won't get into the details of it, obviously, for confidentiality, but they applied for programs, and they were months and months and months and months in waiting. And so the administration of many of those programs was challenging at best, right? And so, yeah, no, the lockdown, Rob, is a unique set of circumstances. It's a first in my lifetime, not since the Spanish flu. And so that's exactly why government is there, is to help people during these unbelievably unusual circumstances and help bridge us to the next time. And you know what? If there's another crisis, my hope and my expectation is the government will jump in there as well. But as we ramp out of this, and if we don't hit a second wave, the key to this will be the private enterprise system. It is the engine that drives our country.
All right. If you are able to give Aaron O'Toole some advice, what should his priority be right now?
Wow. Well, that's a great question, Rob. I feel a little bit uncomfortable. I will answer your question in giving our leader and as a junior member of caucus. I think Aaron knows exactly where he wants to hit our country. But I think we hit on it right there. So we are going to go through some challenging times. We, of course, need to work with our provincial partner to push back to the extent that there is a second wave or will be a second wave to keep Canadians safe. And then from there, we need to get the economy rolling. We need to get jobs back to Canadians, and we need to make life more affordable. One has to remember that heading into this pandemic, we were in a very difficult economic situation. Coming out of the pandemic now, we have the highest unemployment in the G7, and also we spent the most. So our return on investment for pandemic spending wasn't as good as the rest of the world. And so we need to get the economy back running, and we need to make sure that our economy, that we grow back the right way and we get going strongly. Because the other thing that's on the, like I said, number one, keep Canadians safe. Number two, grow the economy. And number three is we do have to be aware of where our deficit and our debt, because if you remember, and you're a couple days older like me, if you remember back at one point I believe it was the early 90s, that the Chrétien government went to the world markets and said, hey, we want to borrow some money to pay down our debt. And they said, well, no. And so we have to be aware of that. We can't keep spending an infinitum. Obviously, number one is to keep Canada safe. Number two is to get the economy rolling, because when the economy is rolling, we can pay down our deficit, make sure that we are paying for those social programs that we need.
Should Canadians go to the polls this fall?
You know what? The number one thing, as I said, is to keep Canadians safe. And so when I look at that, that's my number one concern. If we are going to go to the polls, we have to be confident we can do it safely. When I look out there and I talk to the constituents, Rob, I've been out there more and more with my mask on, of course, keeping 6 feet away, as we all should be, and using copious amounts of hand sanitizer. You can tell that by my hands. They're all worn down from hand sanitizer like everyone else. But when we look at that when I'm out there talking to constituents, there is a lack of faith in this government that's out there. And so that's going to be troubling for the current government. It's troubling for me as a member of parliament. People have had their faith in government reduced. We are now having a prime minister who's going to likely be convicted of third ethics violation in 5 years. The first ever prime minister to be found guilty of an ethics violation. His whole narrative about the we scandal seems to be falling down. He had said it was just a public sector that they had come up with this proposal, that he had reservations about it, but because the public sector said it was the best thing, he went ahead. That seems to be falling apart. And now there's numerous correspondence between the finance minister's office, the PMO, and the we charity.
But let's be honest, you look at anybody right now, and the biggest thing on their mind is kids going back to school. Right. And getting through the fall semester with the kids, you know, this incredibly complex set of circumstances for these kids to go back. And, you know, I don't care what level of education we're talking about, from kindergarten right to postgraduate studies. This is top of mind for a lot of people. And I find it hard to believe, and I'm sure there must be some listeners out there that would say the same thing, is this really what we need to be talking about? Is we scandals and having an election in the middle of just trying to, you know, figure out how I can go back to work, how I can make sure that my kid doesn't get sick going back to school and then spread it and this second wave. Why is it that we even are talking remotely about an election this fall, rather than worrying about, as you said yourself, the top priority is everybody's health?
Absolutely. So let me just clarify. First of all, you asked, and secondly, I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. And so I'm having those conversations. 5-year-old and 6-year-old. My apologies, she turned 5 and I keep forgetting that. So I've had those conversations with my wife, with her, with fellow parents. I was listening last night to a call from our principal about the protocols of going back to school. I 100% get that. And I think we should be safe. And let's also be clear about something. It is not our party that is right now pushing for an election. The prime minister had absolutely no obligation and really no reason to prorogue parliament and to come back with a throne speech. He's the one who's going to be going for a vote of confidence, not us. Given my druthers right now, we would be in parliament, not discussing votes of confidence or election, Rob, like you said, but putting together that package to help Canadians recover. Because what's going to happen is he's going to, at least it sounds like, wrap in a vote of confidence with the recovery package, which puts, it's just a political game. It's a sham. And so he's trying to box us in, play political games when we should be helping Canadians. So I agree with you, Rob, 100%.
Philip, it's been great talking to you as always. And I thank you so much. I know you're so busy and I appreciate so much that you take the time to talk to me today.
Perfect. And thank you very much, Rob.
That was my conversation with Northumberland Peterborough South MP Philip Lawrence. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. While we are busy self-isolating, it's important to remember the world has not stopped entirely. If you know of a good story or have an idea for a story, please let me know. You can email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com and include as much detail as possible, especially contact information. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, you can also email me at that same address. Or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this.